Now.
Okay. And good morning to those here on the West Coast of the U.S. Good afternoon to those on the East Coast and everywhere in between. And also good evening for those that might be tuning in from Europe. My name is Michael Filiguera. If you don't know who I am the proprietor, owner of TradersHelpingTraders.com and LogicalSignals.com. And a little bit about my background. I have been trading in the market since 1979. I was an options market maker here in San Francisco, where I live, and I traded on the PCX, which is the Pacific Exchange. I've also traded on the London Traded Options Market, the European Exchange, Options Exchange in Amsterdam, and also on the DTB, which is the German exchange. And that is where I got my first introduction into electronic trading. And that was back in the 1990s, like 95, 96. They were the first exchange to go all electronic. And it was a great experience. And it kind of helped me out to learn a little bit more about the ease of trading electronically versus being a member of an exchange and standing on a trading floor and punishing yourself with all of the stress and the noise and everything else that kind of comes at you there. I came back to the U.S. in 1997, came back to San Francisco, actually returned to the floor because that's what I know how to do. And then when the U.S. started to go electronic, and that would have been about 2001, 2002, it really took hold. The floor kind of emptied out. And so I, along with a lot of other people, decided to move off the floor. And I set up myself here in my home and continued to trade options basically. And about 2013, I really was kind of getting tired of the overnight volatility that was taking place in the market. Because again, as markets advanced and trading advanced, it seemed that U.S. tradable securities and options kind of rolled around the clock, where before our overnight exposure wasn't as evident because the exchanges weren't open. So we would catch it first thing in the morning, and then that was more easier to handle. But getting it overnight changed the whole picture and changed everything for me in trading. And I decided in about 2013 that I wasn't going to trade options anymore, and I decided that I wanted to trade futures. And then I became a futures trader and a day trader. And that's kind of what I have built my little business around right now. And so what I have currently is I produce a daily update, and that's going to be on the S&P 500 future, or the ES, and the NASDAQ 100 future, which is the NQ. I publish those and post them on YouTube each and every day. That would be Sunday through Thursday. And then I do take off on Friday and Saturday from posting. I also have a trade room that I operate each morning. And we gather at 9 a.m. Eastern, and I run it till about 11. So about 3 hours each morning, and I go over what took place, what's happening, what might be happening today, et cetera, any numbers, any economics figures, et cetera. Where I'd like to begin, because of course I'm here to analyze what you guys may have that you would like to hear about. And so if not, then where I usually start when I do these with David is I put my analysis up for the S&P 500. And so, because that's the one that I publish, and it is very active along with the NASDAQ. As those of you that probably have been trading now and you're in there trading every day, whether you are a swing trader, a day trader, a scalper, or a long-term position trader, it has not been easy to trade. There have been so many mixed signals lately, and we're getting them from this increase in financial media. And part of one of the big changes that I, of course, and many people notice in the market is the instantaneous news. We get it instantaneously. So there's the reactions. But here's what's also been added into that, there are now algorithms that are focused, or their entire focus is they interpret the news. So if we're getting a report, or say for initial jobless claims or GDP or any of those reports, including earnings reports, the algorithm or the computer is going to pick up all of those click phrases, click words in there that it already is programmed to interpret as bullish or bearish. So when we get many times like initial jobless claims or GDP or other numbers or even interest rate information, you'll see these humongous moves immediately, right off the 2 seconds after the news hits the tape, boom, we get these reactions. And they're not always correct. Because even though algorithms are perfect and they really do produce a lot of trades, I don't know if they've really got it all figured out on, it's like, this word means buy it, this word means sell it, as being correct. In any case, that has added a whole additional layer as to how I interpret the markets, because I use Elliott Wave. And that's my primary tool for analysis, but it also can be included as an indicator. So combining the two give me an idea. Now, if you don't have any background in Elliott Wave, it's going to just sound like gibberish to you. But the basic premise, it was put together by a man, and R.N. Elliott was his name, and he wrote this theory. And he wrote it, back in the 1930s, so last century. And the purpose was that he became very ill. He had problems with his lungs, and he moved here to California, and particularly Southern California, so in the Los Angeles area, and because that's where he needed it for his lungs. He needed that warmer weather or the drier weather or whatever the situation. And while he was here, he continued to monitor the Dow Jones. And I think he had a couple other indexes. And what he would do is he would copy down the price of that index each hour. So at the top of the hour, he would copy down the price, and then he charted it. And what he began to realize is that he could see these moves that were happening, and he could relate it to what was actually going on within the market, and then related that to what and how traders, investors, brokers, whomever at the time, how they were interpreting that time and or just the movement in the market. So Elliott Wave basically isn't something that's going to be, because Elliott Wave knows nothing about fundamentals, and it doesn't take fundamentals into consideration when you're producing a wave count. What it does follow and what it does measure is the human emotional response to all of this news, to the markets, to what's happening around them. So it's all based on us. And as most of us know, at least the saying is, there are basically two emotions on any trading floor or within any trading realm, and they're fear and greed. You know, fear that you're going to lose your money, greed that you don't have enough. And that produces a lot of really strange, bizarre moves. Now, add into all of this, what's really kind of happened after this, the new millennial started, was everything goes electronic, and the development of algorithms to actually go in and scour and search and do trades. And then all of the progressive things that have taken place really has brought us to where we are now. So the question really now turns into, Is Elliott Wave still an effective methodology or effective strategy or an effective indicator to give us an idea of what comes next? And my answer is yes. Now, how we begin to look at a market is we would always start, and I'm going to have to change my screen so we can go over here. Let's take a look at the SPX, which is the S&P cash market, because I have data on that. That goes back to 1928. If I go to the Dow, I have that back to 1902. And those are all courtesy of Thinkorswim platform, which was owned by TD Ameritrade, now owned by Charles Schwab. And what Elliott taught us, or what he wrote about, was that you always start with the biggest chart that you can get, the largest amount of data that you can gather and build off of. Well, now we're beginning in 2023, we have years and years, we got over 100 years of data available to us right instantaneously on our screens, on most screens. And so we can really start to put it together. The basic premise of Elliott Wave is that there are two basic forms, all right? There are two basic structures. One is called an impulse, and an impulse is always going to be the same. It's counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And as you can see, here we have it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when you've got those five, then you're going to get an ABC correction. Put that together, and that would then be considered a complete move. Now, this is on a multi-month chart, but I can take this down all the way to a, let's go down to a five-minute chart. And here again, I'm going to find fives and threes and fives and threes, and they continue to function and they build. So the whole concept of Elliott Wave is that they're building blocks. So we can start at our smallest and that just builds us to our larger. But when we're trying to analyze the market, Elliott always said, start at the biggest picture that you're going to have and work your way down. So did that in mind, what I've been counting lately is, and we can see my degrees. And so he talked about that we have degrees. We can go from the smallest, which we don't see on this screen because they're all up here and bunched together, is labeled in purple. And those are the sub-minuet. And then we have a minute, which is gray, a minor, which is the tan, an intermediate degree yellow, primary green, cycle brick red, supercycle sky blue. Now, supercycle takes years to unfold. So here we are. What I think we finished in January of 2022, which was still the all-time high for the S&P, for the Dow, for the NASDAQ, for the Russell, is a supercycle, wave three. Now, understanding that we have five-wave structure that we're building, and it has one, two, three, four, five. Well, on a supercycle degree level, I'm looking for a corrective phase, supercycle wave four, to be followed by another big economic expansion, which will be called supercycle wave five. But now we have to put things into a time frame. We have to look at, well, how long is this all going to take? Let's just take a quick peek to realize that supercycle wave three started in 1932, right? That was the low, 1932. That's where three started. And when did it finish? 2022. Holy cow, 90 years. That's a long time, longer than most of us here listening today have been alive. But we can take it down. We can continue to look. I need to go a little bit longer. Let's go out to the daily. Yeah, here we go. So what we can also see inside of all this is, let me go back to that monthly maximum, because I want to show you a couple of, as we're coming up in here, here are the 60s, the 70s. This was 70 to 75, approximately. 1974, that was also a really dark period in the market. It was slow. It was nothing. It was, very, and so we had this correction. And then we had another bull market. And here I want to show you, here's the 1987 crash. Those of us that were there at the time, we thought it was the end of the world, the end of the market, the end of all money, was all going to crash. We're all going to go out of business. Look at, it's nothing. It's a blip, if anything, on this long-term screen. Now, here we have the primary or the cycle degree fourth wave. And this is the great financial collapse of 2008-2009, which again looks like nothing on this long-term big picture. But again, there's many of us, I think, in this listening today, we traded this. It was dynamic. It was at points very frightening. What was going on? How deep are they going to take this? I remember them just hitting different stocks and driving them lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. It was crazy. Now, come up here. See that right there? That's the pandemic. And I'm really going to go with the thing that it's like most of us, maybe even go further back, 20. Most of us were likely in the markets at this time. And many of us joined because of the pandemic, right? Couldn't go to work, couldn't leave the house. What am I going to do, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of people decided, well, you know what? I think I'll give my hand at trading. We picked up a whole lot of new people. They came in here. So my point here is that if we're using Elliott Wave does not really tell us. We could see that the correction was coming, but I couldn't tell you how. I could give you estimates on how deep, but I had no idea what would cause it. You could see that the correction was coming here. At the time, I was trading, and I could see that it got slower and slower, but they kept climbing, and the market was really giving signals that it needed to do a correction, but I couldn't tell you what was going to kick it off. And then, of course, once it started, it was like, then it all made sense, and then we went to from mortgages to worse, to worse, to worse, because we had failures. We had bank failures. We had large corporation failures. We had all kinds of things happen. Now, what produced this rally? Well, we had a Federal Reserve and a Treasury that decided to come up with a zero interest rate policy. And that was the only thing that really could be available because we now needed to bail out Wall Street. We needed to bail out corporations. We needed to make our government needed to make money available at zero or as close as they could get at zero interest rates. So we gave out a tremendous amount of money. And then folks, it's trillions of dollars. Now we all want to complain about how we've got, you know, the government spending, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, well, if we didn't, our people in Washington wouldn't have, or if they did, they wouldn't want to work it because they'd only be making $10, right? Because we wouldn't have any money. So this was the government stepping in and bailing out corporations. A lot of really cheap money. There was a lot of stock buybacks. There was a lot of everything else. And boy, look at what it just went and went and went. And then we got the pandemic, which was a shock to the system. But what happened here? Government had to step back in, not necessarily to bail out corporations this time. They had to step in to bail out us, the workers, because we couldn't leave our homes. We couldn't go out. We couldn't go to work. Offices were closed. Downtowns became ghost town. So they stepped in and they saved us. Now, there were many that actually didn't need those stimulus checks. So they got them. And what did they do? Put it back into the market. We get the next finishing rally. Now, Elliot saw that the rally was coming, but Elliot couldn't tell you anything about, well, the zero interest rates, they're going to go stick another $8.5 trillion into the monetary system. So when you get up to this top and you're looking, it's like, okay, well, that's a super cycle top here. So if we're going to do a super cycle wave four, what's really going to be in the greatest need that the market's going to have? It needs to correct this excess. There's a lot of excess capital in the markets, in the system. Now you're going to hear that Washington is like, we still need to borrow more money to pay our bills. Well, what happened to all that excess? It is out in other people's hands, still in the market, but not necessarily being used by the government. So again, a lot of factors go into what we do here. But Elliot gives us a clear roadmap of what we can expect. Now, let's bring this all the way back down. Let's take a look at our daily chart. Now, let me go out to the weekly to be. So what we got going on, here's our great all-time high in the SPX. And now I'm actually going to go back to the future because that's what I'm more familiar with. So here's the future, which will always, most of the time, trade higher in price than the cash market because of premium, because of interest, the cost of borrow. So this high, 48.0 all-time high, we put our labels on, and it was an intermediate fifth wave completion, primary fifth wave completion, cycle degree fifth wave completion, and a super cycle wave three. So we're in a super cycle wave four correction. What is it going to consist of? An ABC of cycle degree. What's going to be in that first wave of cycle A? An ABC of primary degree. Well, what's going to be in that first wave down of primary degree? Primary three waves of intermediate degree, A, B, C. So building blocks, bear in mind when I said building blocks. So we're just working backwards now to kind of figure out what we're going to be doing going forward, right? So we know that we had to do three down and form each degree. So if the larger degree is showing a correction, then we know corrections are A, B, C. Impulse waves are five, and those are going in this direction of the trend, which was up at the time. So they're going to be counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so if we're in a super cycle, wave three, all of the subsequent degrees will also be operating in the same fashion. So in other words, we're all counting impulse. The super cycle wave three was an impulse move. It just began in 1932. But what was inside of that? Five waves of cycle degree. What was inside of cycle wave five? Five waves of primary degree. What was in primary wave five? Five waves of intermediate degree, all counted the same way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, to make this even more complex, I guess, is that you have five waves. Waves 1, 3, and 5 are those impulse waves. Wave 2 corrects wave 1, wave 4 corrects 3. Combined together, we call that a move. When we add the ABC, it's a complete move. So I'm looking for, I'll be right with you, Paul. If we are looking for a super cycle wave four, then we have completed all the fives, and now we're looking for threes. So that if we're looking for it on a super cycle, it's the same on the cycle, it's the same on the primary, it's the same. They all operate in the same fashion. All of subsequent cycles down, subsequent degrees down, will be operating in that same ABC fashion. So this is how we build our picture. So anyway, Paul, yes. You had raised your hand. I can't open your mic, but you can ask your question if you want, and then I'll catch it here in the chat, and then I'll be able to do that. Sasha, I'll answer your question in just a moment. So what we're counting out now is that we have completed a primary wave A, and that took us to the October 2022 lows. And from that point, we worked, and this is where also Elliot helps. I counted three waves down, and then that's primary A. Now I'm looking for a primary B wave. What's it going to consist of? Three waves of intermediate degree. There's A, there's B. The C was dynamic. And there's certain counts that don't show it complete just yet. Mine does. So now let me bring this down to the daily. Now we can see all the internals, right? So now we can go down one more. Here we are, intermediate wave A of primary wave B. What's going to be inside that intermediate wave? Three waves labeled A, B, C of minor degree. So here we go down that scale. And then we have a B wave. What's going to be in there? Three waves of minor degree, A, B, C. Then we get into the C wave. What's it going to consist of? Well, we know from Elliot, because he wrote us the rules, all C waves must be five waves. This was his observation. This is his theory. So we have to follow it if we're going to follow the same path that he took. So we're going to have an intermediate C wave, right? What's going to be inside of that? Well, five waves of one, two, three. It should be right here. It somehow got removed. Four, five. And that completed the cycle all the way up. So we can go one more down. You'll see these kind of whitish gray ones. What that suggests is that what happens inside of primary wave of minor wave five, also minor wave three, there'll be five waves of minute. If you remember going back to that other one, I went all the way down to minuet. So we have that minuet. I call it sub, but it actually is just plain minuet. Those are going to be the purple, and you'll see them over here because they're smaller. They're much smaller. If we're on a daily chart, you'll see they get all clustered together. And then we have the minute, and here we can count them. We have one, two, three, four, five. So that finished minor wave. But here it actually finished minor wave three, and then I got minor wave four, which was a bizarre triangle pattern here. And then we had the five up to come out clustered on the daily. But I can bring it down to the four-hour chart. Now I can break it down and I can take a quicker look inside. And you can see all of this trading. And this is where people get confused because they're looking for a particular wave. And yet you get this and you get this strong decline. And then we get these strong rallies and we get another hit and a decline because nothing goes straight up or straight down. So what we have going on is within this minor wave three, we have five waves of minute degree, and that's going to be two, three, four, five. Wave two corrects wave one. Wave three corrects wave four. Same pattern, same style, same everything, just a different degree. And if I keep breaking this chart down, now, right, there's the high of primary wave B. What are we in now? Well, if we're starting a primary C wave, what's going to be in that primary C wave down? Five waves of intermediate degree, right? So all C waves have to be five. So I'm counting a primary C wave. What comes first? Well, I've got five waves of intermediate degree. What's going to be inside that intermediate wave one? Five waves of minor degree. Well, what's going to be inside that minor wave one? Five waves of minute degree. If you're following me, you're going to be able to go, oh. So what have we done off of this high at, in the S&P, it would have been 4634. We got minute wave one, minute wave two, minute wave three. Here we have four. It's corrective, but it ends up being an expanding triangle. And there's some dispute as to whether it is or is not because of the C wave. I'm leaving it as an expanding triangle. That's wave four. And then we start to get the fifth wave, the minute fifth wave down to complete the minor first wave. Now, again, we have to realize there are characteristics to each one of these subwaves, right? Wave one has its characteristics. Wave two has its characteristics. So does wave three. And most of the time, third waves are the longest and the strongest. There are many things that kind of get added into this that are going to assist you as you label and work out what you're expecting. Like right now, I've been looking for an additional low to get us into below here to finish an internal third wave, another four and a five to complete the minuet third wave, another four and a five to complete the minute fifth wave. Then I can put a minor wave one down here. And what do I get next? I get a wave two. How do you count a wave two? ABC. It's corrective. Now, what I can add to this, which gives me even more power, you'll see these lines and all these crazy little numbers. Those are Fibonacci. Leonardo da Fibonacci came along in the 12th century, so well before Eliot. And what he developed was the Fibonacci number sequence. And so it starts at zero, and you take the next number one, and then you take the next and you add. So it's 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, right? Because you're taking the numbers before, 3 and 2, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, and you just keep going. And there's a relationship between those as well. Once you get up to a little bit, you know, when you start to think, it's, if you got 8, what is 5? 5 is 0.618% of the 8. What is 13? 8 is 0.618 of the 13. And that's how this whole thing goes. Now, Eliot started to put this together and say, you know what, there's these relationships between these waves. And if I put some, if I use Fibonacci and his sequence, 0.382, 0.5, 0.618, et cetera, the Fibonacci numbers, that tends to go along with human emotions, believe it or not, and what the reactions can be and where markets find their tops and bottoms accordingly. Now, the thing is to remember, and what Eliot also wrote about, and I really do suggest if you have an interest in Eliot, there are excellent books where you can learn. But Eliot wrote a great book, and it's called The Law of Nature, because the Fibonacci sequence is the law of nature, basically. Our whole bodies are constructed in an Eliot as a Fibonacci, in threes and five, and threes and five. And so, you know, two eyes, a nose. We, if you're looking at your hand, and you have a finger, right? So we have five fingers. How many joints in those fingers? Sting, right? So five and a three. So we are very much in tune with nature, because then we can go over and we can look at a piece of broccoli. As simple as that. Some don't like broccoli. Some of them really love broccoli. Break it down and look at it. Threes and fives, threes and fives. That's how this plant grows. That's how it produces its flowers. You'll find the Fibonacci sequences in nature over and over and over. And so the law of nature, we're human beings. Therefore, we are a part of, and we are subject to the laws. And this is what Eliot wrote about. And it's really something to kind of hold on to and understand, to be honest with you. And once you can, and you accept that, all of this will start to, we're human beings. Yep, we got a brain. Yep, we can think, but we are subject to emotions, reactions, and everything else around us. So are we a part of nature? You betcha. Now, I know, Paul, you had a question, I think. So if you want to go ahead and just put that in the chat, or just to kind of finish up here, just to kind of give you my personal analysis for the S&P 500, I believe that we are pulling into, we need a couple of more legs down. But I got it all the way down to, I'm thinking that we might get down to 4333 before we put in that minor wave one. That's just a guide. It's not necessarily what will take precedence over the fib is the actual structures. So right now I'm looking for this five waves down, and we're getting close. We're getting close to putting that in. So that was the three, the four. I'm looking for the five. That's going to give me this three. Then I'm going to look for another four, five, and that's going to give me that, right? So I got 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of this 3, 4, 5 of this three, and then another 4 and a 5. I'm thinking here, possibly it'll go a little bit further, but this is a fairly, this is about 190 points away. It's a pretty good thing for the S&P. You can cover that, get this all done. And once it is done, and we got minor wave one in the books or on the books, then we will go in and do a minor wave two. Now we take a look. Here's a wave two, ABC. Here's a wave two, ABC, but they're smaller, right? Here's a wave two, ABC. Another thing to understand, and this is where it gets really, can get kind of complicated. There's only one basic plan when we're moving in trend, impulse. There's only one structure for an impulse. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's it. That's the impulse. Now let's go over to the ABC. Let's go over to the corrective. There are 13 different possibilities that the market can take. And now, one of the things that I've noticed with the addition of all of the algorithm, all of the different derivative products that we're creating, that the exchanges create, that are traded by huge firms, they have an effect on what's going to happen in our market. One of the biggest ones is volatility. Now, the volatility index was started basically to cover the OEX, which was the tech part of the S&P back in the day. So they gave it its own index. Eventually, out of all that came the NASDAQ. But we had that, the OEX, if those of you are old enough to remember. And so that tracked. And then out of that OEX, they devised the volatility. And what the volatility index told us is like, well, what? How fast and how slow are these options moving? And when an option gets very popular or the market is moving quickly, the volatility increases. And what is volatility really equated to? The premium that you and I would pay to buy that option, or how much we're going to receive if we sell that. So now what also gets now controlled by volatility is the theory that, well, you know, in a volatile market, usually the market's going to go down. So volatility will increase because why? There's fear. There's fear in the market now. So when we have a high volatility, that's what they call it, the fear gauge, right? But when we have low volatility and decreasing volatility, it normally gets labeled complacency. Investors are complacent. They don't think it's going to go down. They just all blue skies and everything's wonderful and glorious. Well, somehow over the last few years, with all of the introduction of all the different volatility products, let me just show you, right? I'm just going to go in and say, let's look up the VIX. Well, we got the VIX volatility. We got the ProShares Trust Volatility short-term. We got the midterm. We've got the short-term futures ETF. We've got the S&P one-day volatility index. We've got the three-month volatility. We got the six-month, the nine-day, and we got the one-year, and we got the ProShares midterm. And that's just the beginning. And then that's just for this broader market. Then we have the VXN, and that's the NASDAQ. Then we have another one that covers the Russell. There's more volatility products and derivatives on the derivative. And that has added a whole nother layer into how things trade. And how things trade and what reactions are is what we trade. So what do we think? It's like, well, when a market does, no, we love it. No, we hate it. No, we love it. No, we hate it. And these moves, folks, this is a one-hour chart. So this is one day. And it was a reaction, I believe, if I go back, let me see the date, the 4th. I'm not really sure what happened. But there are days where this was actually after a economic number. Boom, it went up. And I was like, that's it. I think it was a CPI, to be honest. Okay, that was it. Good news is over. Boom. And they sold it. What they did, how do you want to interpret that? Volatility. Now we have, in terms of options, we have options that now expire each and every. So what part of what I'm starting to notice is that, right, here we have, these are the weeklies. So this is tomorrow. So options for today, no, these are today's. Why these are the weeklies, I'm not sure. So tomorrow on, these are the AM, I guess tomorrow must be the monthly expiration. So we have these that expire in the morning. And then we also have the ones that expire in the afternoon. And these are on the SPX. But the zero DTE options, we've all now heard that click phrase. Those are real. Look at the, so they get wrapped around a particular strike price. And then you got to add into the, within the options, we have Delta, Gamma, Theta, Rho, Vega, et cetera, the Greeks. And each one of them means something different. Well, because these expire today, there's no early exercise risk. You can buy and sell them with impunity. And you can start, when Globex starts, I think they start trading the, you can come in and you can start and you can buy and sell and not have to worry that someone's going to early exercise on. So it throws a whole nother ball of wax into the option trade. Now, gamma is a read. And it's like, if you have a high gamma, then as this market moves, your option is going to move an increase in delta. So the gamma tells you how much or how much it will gain or lose in delta as the market moves closer to that strike, above that strike, or below that. That forces a lot of adjustments to be made during the day. How many times have we seen, and not so much now because we're in a whole different ball of wax, but during those, a lot of those rally phases, we'd see the gamma and we'd see the volume gather around a particular strike. Here we have 50,000 of the 4,400 put against 15,000 of the 6,000. So that's 56,000. Then we have 42,000. So we got to go to the highest combined volume, and that's going to contain the highest gamma. And suddenly the market will start to move either up close to it, they'll have throw a rally, or they're putting it into, And that changes people's traders, large traders, because this is where the big boys come to play. And it changes their position to a point where they have to react. If you're long gamma and you happen to be, you know, long puts or short puts or whatever your situation might be, and you get this thing moving against you, your gamma can explode in your face because maybe you had an out of the money call, right? This isn't this level. So you start selling the premium in that call, the 4410 call. Stock's trading 4392. The high is 4421. Do I think it's going to get back there between now and the bell? Probably not. I'll sell this. And you buy a delta neutral, right? So whatever the delta is, you buy and that in the index and likely in the ES. Now they start to rally this thing back to 4410. And then they go through 4410, it's 4412, 4413. You're now getting massively hurt being short. And you didn't one for one hedge your position. So you're being forced to buy into this rally. And then they turn it and they drop it back below 4410. Now you're being forced to sell it. So it's a strange thing, but it is something that really can control a market. Now, with all of these changes, so back to the original conversation. And again, please, folks, if you've got something you want me to look at, please put it in, because I got about 10 more minutes. I have to give it over to David again. So how does all of that affect our account? Well, I did a whole program, a presentation here with David, and the title of the program was that our derivatives, the underlying, and the underlying is the derivative, right? If we're considering the S&P future, and the options on the S&P are the derivative. But because of zero DTE option, is it really? Or are those derivatives the underlying? And the underlying becomes the derivative. Who's in control of what? So, and that's another layer that gets tossed onto, how do we want to look? Are we in a bull market? A lot of people are going to tell you yes. I'm like, really? Last time I saw a bull market start, it didn't start with the conditions that are present at the moment. But yet there are enough people and they will buy it. The number of players has increased simply because we were in a pandemic where everybody had to stay home. A lot of people are still trading. They've had some success. A lot of people are entering the market now because they want to join the party. They see this movement. They see the possibility. You know, as a day trader, you have the strong possibility where you can make $500 or $1,000 every day, 5 days a week. You got to do that. Pretty good living if you can get it done. Not as easy as it. Why? Because the futures markets can get crazy. And what's the component stocks within the S&P, or let's even narrow it down. Let's just go over to the NASDAQ. The component stocks in the NASDAQ, and I'll tell you, I tend to watch them here during the day. And just because I want to see what are they really goofing with? Well, for the longest time, it's been NVIDIA. So you also have to think is also within this NASDAQ index, all of our big, the Magnificent Seven, they call it, okay? They carry the highest weight. So these are a cap-weighted index. So is the S&P, and so is the NASDAQ. Apple being, you know, the $2 trillion company, and for a very short, brief period of time, $3 trillion, they carried a lot of weight. So, for example, what I'm talking about here is Apple can move 5 cents, and suddenly the NASDAQ's moving $3 or $4. As a result of that 5 cent move in Apple, what it creates in the NASDAQ future. Today, we have Google, which was up higher than it is now. But if they come in and they're buying Google and they run it up 10 cents, it is a weighted, it has a certain weight inside of the NASDAQ 100 future. And also because, for example, Apple, Microsoft are in the Dow. Apple, Microsoft are, of course, in the NASDAQ. Apple and Microsoft are, I believe, in the Russell. So when you get a big movement in those stocks, suddenly you see all three of those indexes go ding, 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 and they're off to the races or they're being hit. The big play has been, of course, NVIDIA. They report next week. So usually you get these little tidbits from NVIDIA's CEO. Oh, yeah, we're going to be great. We're going to we're going to rock it again, folks. We're doing so great, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know, isn't that kind of against the rules? But yet he does it. And when he gave his last comments, right, you know, for the second quarter, first quarter report, whatever, the last report that he gave, first quarter, because the second quarter is next. He talked about how the company intends to skunk them again on their earnings because they have this chip and everybody needs it and it's in short supply. So they ran the stock down, and one day last week, they ran it down. I believe it was Thursday, ran it down to 403. And then suddenly he came out and made some statements. And the next thing you know, the stock was trading at 430, 440. That's one day, $50 move. And it has, it also has, because it's over $1 trillion. So it puts it up into that club. It has a higher weighting in the index. So this thing would go, and you're looking at the NASDAQ going like, wait a minute, why is the NASDAQ down? But oh, you look, NVIDIA's up. Oh, Google's up. So it can be down 150, and then suddenly these two start to move, and it cuts it in half. And I go, wait a minute, the rest of these stocks are kind of still down. Yep. But there's certain things that I do notice. Like they'll start to do one, and then you see, oh, if they're going to do AMD, that'll probably go up because NVIDIA. But if NVIDIA was up more than the 50 cents, you would see AMD start to climb up out of its hole. You see AMAT. So why? NVIDIA's artificial intelligence. Click phrase. What else goes with it? Well, Microsoft, that's artificial intelligence. Amazon's artificial intelligence because of web services, blah, blah, blah. So we got a lot of players and they all come jump on the thought. If this stock's up, these must be up because they're up because of artificial intelligence, whatever the situation. Guess how that gets measured into Elliott? Human emotional responses. So when I talk about that, that's what produces these waves. I'm dead serious. That is what produces these waves. Period. Now, it stays interesting. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, it is not always easy because if you want to come and trade futures, it depends on how much your account size is to what you're going to be able to do. The NASDAQ is $5 per tick. There are four ticks to the dollar, but the NASDAQ can move in dollars. Or suddenly it's like it's up $4, $5, $6, $7 for the last trade. I'm not kidding you. We're here to my, oops, this one, right? This is a 5-minute chart. Let's go down to it. Okay, so 2 minutes. Well, let's go to this one. It made it at 14,921 and they ran it up to 14,932 and dropped it right back down. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Actually, it was less than. Here we have the next 2 minute starts at 14,924, bottom to 14,905, $19, $20 a point. So the ability to pick up $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 real dang quick in 2 minutes, it does exist. Your ability to actually do it without getting emotional, without getting excited, with having a plan, a trade plan, et cetera, that's where my trade room, that's where working together with a group so you understand what you're doing. So the ability to earn a good living, it does exist. It really does. And I know that Anka before, she was talking about swing trading. Swing trading is a serious business. And I do congratulate her because I know, because I followed her for a long time, that she does a really dang good job with swing trading. Day trading, different kind of animal, but not impossible because you have to have controls around. You have to have, because we can't put controls around what is the NASDAQ going to. We thought it might be, okay, it's going to go up. And what happens the next thing? Boom. Mind you, this is 1 o'clock. This is 142. So in 42 minutes, the index has gone from 14,956 to 14,860. Almost 100 points in 45 minutes, 100 points times 20 per point. It's tons of money, but you can make it, you can lose it. What I try to teach people is to have their trading rule. If you have your trading rule, very simple. One, what's your trigger? Your trigger is where you're going to enter your trade and why. Maybe it's the moving average. Maybe it's partially part of this. Maybe it's on one of these signals, which is a scalp alert. Maybe it's a moving average. Maybe it is on my other charts. Let me get rid of that. These charts, these are my trading screen. And what I got on here are volume order volume profile. And I have some other indicators above and below. And that helps me to choose whether I'm going to go long or whether I'm going to go short. When they break moving averages, you can take a short. But when before you do it, right, like this, if it breaks below this moving average, you might want to short it. What's your goal? Well, my goal is that maybe it's going to get down to 65. If I short it at 75, I'm going to look to make $10. Now you have a goal. Okay, where's your stop? Where are you going to get out if the trade becomes invalid? Well, what's my risk? Well, if I'm willing to make $200, I'm going to risk $100. You're going to realize when you trade the NASDAQ that $100 will come like so. But it's all very workable. And oh, you couldn't see that. I'm so sorry because my share is on this screen. Sorry about that. So anyway, I was talking about using our moving average and then trading. So it never takes me very long to use up my allotted time when I do these presentations. So I'm going to wrap it up now. Any last minute questions, I'll take care of those. Otherwise, I want to really thank you for your time and for hanging out with me and for listening. I'm hoping I've given you some information to kind of take away and to think about. Again, my primary focus and for trading is day trading. And there are different styles. You can still be a swing trader and a day trader, limited to the day. And outside of that, you're welcome. Thank you, Sasha. And so if you have any interest, I think David already put it in there, you can send me an email. My email address is michael@mjf1partners.com. I always respond, a legit question, have an answer. I do also offer coaching. So that's one-on-one coaching, and it could be helping you to learn day trading, helping you to learn mindset work, helping you to figure out, you know, how, what all of this means. And I'm going to leave it all right there. And David, thank you so much.